My friends, I do hope you had a lovely Halloween, or will have a happy Halloween, or are having a happy Halloween. You know what? If the spookiness truly lives in your hearts, then every day is Halloween. This tale is about an imaginary friend who might just be not that imaginary after all. This is Confidant by Micah Edwards and read for us by David Ault.
The Confidant by Micah Edwards. When I was a kid, I used to have a little wooden music box, the kind that plays a tinny little tune when you open up the lid. It had these intricate knot carvings all over the outside, and the inside was lined with red velvet. Perhaps it was meant to be a jewelry box or something, but I used it for passing notes to my imaginary friend. I remember him extremely well, better than some actual friends from my childhood, honestly. His name was Bella, and he lived somewhere very far away. I never decided exactly where he lived, but it was definitely too far to go and visit. We were basically pen pals, and we'd write back and forth to each other through the box. I'd write a note and leave it in the box, and the next morning I'd have a note from Bella. Obviously, I was filling in both halves of the conversation, but it was a fun hobby and it kept me from being lonely. I was, as you may have guessed, kind of a weird kid. So a lot of my social interactions with other kids went poorly, to varying degrees. I learned quickly that the advice adults gave was stupid. Stick up for yourself to that bully. Be friendly and the other kids will be friendly too. Just be yourself. So instead, I talked to Bela about my problems. He served as my diary for a lot of elementary school. He was my confessional and my therapist. And for a figment, he was extremely helpful. He always commiserated, and he didn't offer solutions that were only going to make the problems worse, like adults did. Bela's solutions, my solutions, were long-term fixes. Troublemaking friends? Bela would help me to figure out a way to develop shared interests so that we naturally had things in common. Issues with my parents? His notes would point out their perspective and help me find logical arguments to get them to understand mine. Bully picking on me? We came up with a plan that ended up with him being put into foster care by CPS. I felt badly about that one years later when I thought about it, but at the time, I was just relieved that he was gone. And really, it was probably a good thing even for him. If his home life was bad enough for CPS to step in once they found out about it, I did him a favour in the end. I was just bringing attention to a bad situation. For years, Bella was my friend, confidant and helper. I'm honestly not sure exactly when or why I stopped writing to him. I suppose at some point my parents decided that I was too old to have an imaginary friend and took the box away. Or possibly I came to that conclusion myself and just stopped on my own. Either way, I stopped exchanging notes with Bela and lost track of the box. That was decades ago. I hadn't thought about the box or my childhood friend Bela in years. But last weekend, I was cleaning out my parents' attic and came across that little wooden music box tucked away in a dusty plastic crate. My eyes lit up when I saw it. Memories came flooding back. I may have been lonely and weird as a child, but I always enjoyed my imaginary pen pal. I blew the dust off the box and ran my fingers over the complicated knotwork carvings, remembering secrets shared and problems solved. With a grin, I opened the lid to see what was inside. Tinny music spilled out, the familiar strains of In the Hall of the Mountain King. I was frankly amazed that the music still worked after all the years in the attic, but I was even more surprised to see that the box was stuffed to overflowing with slips of paper. My first thought was that my parents had somehow saved my notes and stored them all in the box before putting it in the attic. So I sat down to read them and find out what had preyed on my mind as a child. Hall of the Mountain King continued to tinkle out behind me as I started to read. I haven't heard from you in a few days, the first note began. I hope you haven't gone on vacation without me again, haha. Are things going well with the new neighbours? I still think bonding with Brian is a good long-term move. He's in your grade and more assertive than you, so it gives you an ally both at school and in the neighbourhood at home. Don't let Wes win him over. This was from seventh grade, when the Flemings had moved in next door. It was advice I should have heeded, too. I remembered ruefully how Brian and Wesley had shut me out of social circles throughout middle and high school, proving their cool at my expense. Wes and I had been friends in early elementary school, so he had plenty of ammunition. Brian learned quickly when he started palling around with Wes. I didn't shake some of the nicknames I got from those two until I went off to college. "Hey, it's been over a week," said the second note. "Everything okay? I'm worried about you. Just drop me a note so I know you're not sick or anything." I turned that one over, puzzled, but there was nothing else on the back. That seemed like a fairly weird note to leave for myself, even in the guise of a pen pal. There was nothing about my life, nothing about his. Maybe I really had been sick at the time. I didn't recall any major illnesses in seventh grade, but it was possible. I picked up the third note. "You've abandoned me. It's been a month. Why? I was always there for you." Fourth note. "I hate you." Fifth. "I'm sorry. Why did you leave me? Please write back, please." Sixth. "I'll find you." The seventh slip of paper also read, "I'll find you." So did the 8th, 9th, 10th, and all of the rest. I stopped counting and just started flipping through the remaining papers, but all of the dozens of remaining notes bore the same message, sometimes in all caps, sometimes in regular writing, and once in pen strokes so heavy they'd torn the paper in four places. Over and over again, "I'll find you." Alone in the attic, surrounded by threatening slips of paper, that tinny little rendition of Hall of the Mountain King suddenly sounded very ominous. I hastily stacked up all of the notes and crammed them back into the box, cutting off the music as I latched the lid shut. I put the box back into its dusty crate and placed another crate on top of it. I told myself it was getting late and I'd finish up the attic another day, and I left the house. This morning, I got out of my shower to see that my mirror had steamed up, which is usual. What was unusual was the intricate knotwork lines traced onto its surface, as if someone had stood there and carefully drawn them onto the steamed glass. The entire mirror was covered, and the design was eerily reminiscent of the carvings on the outside of my music box. I wiped the mirror clean, but as I did so, I heard, very faintly, the notes of In the Hall of the Mountain King playing somewhere in my house. I exited the bathroom to hear it better, but the noise ceased as soon as I opened the door. I got dressed and left the house in a hurry. Halfway to work, I drove over a pothole and the glove box of my car popped open. Sitting inside was my little wooden music box. Its lid had also come unlatched, and its tinny music mocked me, daring me to open it. I did, only to find that the box now contained only a single piece of paper. "I found you." I threw the box out of the window of the car and saw it break on the road. I saw the wood crack, saw the little tin cylinder pop out and roll away. And yet, when I got to work, I found a little wooden music box sitting on my desk. It's carved in intricate knotwork, and I'm sure that if I open it, I'll be greeted by a red velvet interior and the tinny sounds of In the Hall of the Mountain King. It's just a music box. It's completely harmless. But Bela always was a long-term planner. I think about the possibilities, and I'm terrified.